my career has not been about me. Like, it hasn't been about like getting a title or getting something. It's like, what difference do I want to make in the world? Who do I want to work with? How do I want to help someone else? And when it's not about me, then it's really easy to do good work and be in bold conversations and make big changes, because it's like, yeah, I'm going to screw up. I'm a like complete weirdo at times. And so if I can accept that and love that and clean up my messes and be responsible for my messes along the way, then I can like play a bigger game. It's like, it's not actually about me. It's about making a difference in the world. So if I want to make a difference in the world, I got to get over myself real quick.
Hi, I'm Diana, certified career strategist, leadership and sales coach with 10 plus years of experience helping high performing teams and individuals figure out their careers. Welcome to the Spotlight Project, where we'll be listening to a one-time, raw and unfiltered career conversation of everyday people willing to share their stories. This podcast is being recorded on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Everyone, it's your hostess with the mostest. I actually don't know where that phrase came from, but this is your hostess with the mostest, Diana, on the MIC. I am so excited today. I have one of my biffles, my best friend in the whole wide world, Matthew Corker, here joining us for a conversation around careers. Really the messiness with careers, because they're not perfect. They zigzag, there's no straight line, there's no real plan, there's no manual anyone hands you, right, to figure out what it is you want to do with your career. And I think Matt has a super cool story. So welcome, Matt.
So good to be here, dude.
Maddie. I'm going to use my childhood name for you, which is Maddie.
You know, it's a term of endearment. It's a term of endearment coming from you.
Right? Maddie, do you want to tell... I was going to say fans. I don't think I have a huge fan base yet, but
we're building it.
Introduce yourself to everyone. What's your name? What's your pronouns? And what do you do today in your job?
Yeah, well, it's so funny because I think that there's a piece of introducing ourselves that has always been tied to our career. And I think that, you know, we'll probably get into that. But for the sake of the intro and to follow the rules of the podcast, my name is Matt Corker. My pronouns are he, him. I live in Vancouver on the unceded territory of the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh and Musqueam Nations. And currently, I am the proud chief operating officer at Smash and Tess, a company that is revolutionizing how people feel in their bodies by wearing rompers.
I was gonna say, you're the romper revolution.
Yeah, you know, our CEO often refers to us as like we're launching the rocket ship called world domination via romper revolution.
Wow, world domination equals romper revolution. If that's not an aspirational goal, I do not know what is. That's amazing. Before we get into, you know, like the grittiness of your career, because you have a super interesting story, can you tell actually people how we know each other and how we met? Because I mentioned earlier we're biffles, but I think it's important for people to know that context so they get why we talk to each other the way we do.
correct me if I'm wrong, but we met each other in grade three? Grade two?
No.
What?
You're failing this childhood quiz right now.
Oh my gosh. If this was a Trivial Pursuit, A, you know never to put me on a Trivial Pursuit team. This is a bad quiz show. I thought this was a podcast. Get me off. No, I'm just kidding.
We met in grade five, silly.
We met in grade five.
Oh God. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Can we just like cut this part out?
No, this is staying. People need to know that you've screwed this up. They need to know you screwed something up.
We met in grade five and yes, we became very fast friends. I don't know actually the instance we became friends though. Do you?
Pop quiz. No, that's...
Oh, look who's failing the Trivial Pursuit now. Okay, see how this happens.
That's completely faded from my memory, yeah.
I mean, it was a momentous occasion for both of us, as the audience can now guess. But we have since not only lived across the street, no, like across town, we'll say, from one another.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we went to high school together. And then you came out and visited me when I moved to Vancouver.
Yes.
Because we were at universities across the country. And then I kept telling you that you needed to move to Vancouver to be closer to me. And then you were like, no, no, no. And then one day you said yes. And it was the most magical day. And we lived, again, blocks away from each other, which was great. And then I moved. And then you moved blocks away again.
It's
so
gross.
I feel like there's this like magnetic pull, you know, there's this like polarity that needs to be in balance in the universe by us being in close proximity to each other for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I look at it as a magnetic pull, more of you nag me for years to move out here.
Also that, you know, tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato. But look, here we are. Here we are. And honestly, been neighbors since I moved out here 3 years ago, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And now fun Auntie D to your little boy, Sash. I'm his, yeah, his favorite aunt in the world. I know that.
I mean, yes, he definitely has a lot of aunts that claim the favorite spot, and he hasn't yet distinguished his favorite one. But I think that we'll have to have some form of like gladiator style gauntlet challenge when outdoor adventures are allowed again. And I'm pretty sure you're going to win anyway, but I just want to like make it very clear to everyone, you know?
Yes, exactly. We're going to have a dance off. That's how I'm going to conquer that.
The first challenge is a dance off and everyone fails except you.
100%. I only play games I can win. That's how I rumble. Well, thank you for that, Matt. Because yeah, we've known each other a really, really long time, and I think that's why we have a level of comfortability with each other. And I think that's why I'm okay to like poke at you. Because can I just say this? I don't think I've ever said this to you. So when I first came to Vancouver, I knew you were famous, but to me, you've always been Maddie Corker. That's just my BFF, whatever. He's my jam. But we would walk around Vancouver together and you literally would know every person every 5 minutes. And in my head, I'm like, what is happening? Why is he so famous? But I think this is going to play into a question, I promise.
You're just like roasting me. this isn't a podcast. This is just a roast. I got swindled.
But genuinely, so you go on LinkedIn, you have an incredibly impressive resume, right? An MBA, you got in Copenhagen and graduated UBC, you spent 5 years in ops, in product ops at Lululemon, CEO of a company, and now COO. And I feel like that's what a lot of people see you as, this incredibly successful figure in the community. But what do you think has been a misconception about you that people usually get wrong when they meet you for the first time?
A misconception about me. I think
what assumption people make.
Yeah, I think that people I know that I'm famous. Like I think that you know what I mean? Like does that, and for me, I think I have the same perspective as you. Like what do you mean? I'm just like a normal dude that likes to wear rompers down the street. You know, like it's not I don't feel that pressure or that I don't know what, like fake fame that some people may put me in. And I remember early on when I was talking to my sister, Steph was like, you know, one day you're going to be really famous and you're not going to know how to deal with it. And while I would never call myself famous, I do think about that often. Like I don't know how to deal with popularity or fame or whatnot. Cause really all I want to do is like be your best friend and make you cookies.
And you have made me so many cookies.
So many. Technically I don't make the cookies. I just decorate the cookies. Chad is, my husband is definitely the expert baker / chef. And I like to just put sugar on them in fancy ways.
You put the joy in the cookie. That's what you do.
I created like the visual experience, I like to say.
The aesthetic, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, okay, can I just say this is what I love about you, is that you, your name is really well known, not just in Vancouver, but in the field of talent and performance and in humans, so the only way I could put it. But you are still always genuine and real and humble, which I think is what makes you a very exciting leader as well. So can we,
I think that may be the nicest thing you've ever said to me. Like, I'm blushed right now. Look at you. This podcast has changed you. I'm into it.
I saved this only for the podcast.
I appreciate it.
I kind of want to take a step back, and you know, move kind of through the motions of your career or wherever you started, but let's start here. When people ask you what you do for a living, how do you respond?
You know, it's interesting because prior to joining Smash and Tess, I was, you know, interviewing or talking to a number of different organizations. And I felt like my career has been quite multifaceted and I didn't really know how to be like pitching myself. And so what I landed on, what became so clear to me is I make really complicated problems easy. And so whether that's a growth plan, whether that's a process, whether that's a interpersonal conflict on the team, like I love the messy. And so I love the unknown. I love the problems that team members don't want to touch. I love the conversations people are too scared to have. Like I love those. And I think that they're quite easy to be with. So they're not necessarily easy to solve all the time. Like some of them are quite complicated. But I don't get nervous or scared or overwhelmed in those spaces. I actually think I thrive in those spaces.
Can you say more about that?
Well, I feel like my boiling point is quite high. Mm. So it doesn't take a lot to get me riled up. And maybe that's because I've also, you know, been practicing yoga for 15 years. And so there's also that element of, oh, I can actually chill out a little bit. And it's given me a lot of perspective. What really matters. You know, I've worked with a number of retail and government and like healthcare and educational institutions, and nothing has been a problem where people's lives are on the line.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so for me, I feel quite privileged in that to be able to say like, the decisions that I'm making isn't a matter of life and death. And when my occupation is not tied to someone's ability to live, physically live, then I feel like everything else is okay. Like we're gonna be okay.
I feel like that's really interesting. I don't know if that's a perspective you're the one who seeped into me, but it's one I think about a lot too. Because when you're we're in the day-to-day in these what we feel like is high stake roles, and especially in leadership roles where we have to make a lot of big decisions, it's really easy to get super stressed and to get wrapped up in the mess of it all. But to take a step back and go, is anyone, you know, gonna die after this or be, you know, traumatically altered? You know, maybe not. So, and that's okay, right? But I think that's a really interesting perspective. So, okay, you say that, it's almost like I hear you say you're the master of mess. You're Mr. Clean, but not bald, you know?
I mean, yeah, you know, I could take the Mr. Clean. I mean, he's jacked, so.
He is jacked.
That's, you know, kudos to him for his hard-earned mopping skills. I think that that's like a common thread in my career. So I started out at UBC when they wanted to figure out how to engage the alumni of the Faculty of Science, which was the only faculty on campus with the lowest net promoter score in the community. And
really?
Oh yeah.
Like, did not know that.
People graduated from that program, and this is like back in the day, so I can't speak to current state. But people graduated from that program and hated it. And like would not want to go back either to get involved or volunteer or donate. Like the sentiment of science grads was just not positive. And so by going into that role, I was really there to reinvigorate this institutional pride of like, aren't you proud to be from UBC? When like the majority of people would look at me and be like, no. Mm. And that was different because, you know, they could argue, I loved the faculty because they challenged all surveys and data based on, well, is this research actually statistically accurate? And there were things like, well, you know, we're a really big faculty. So we looked at the Faculty of Arts and they had a better net promoter score. And they're like, well, we're a scientific field. We looked at engineering and they had a better net promoter score. So there's all these things that they just didn't want to align with the data. And so it was really fun to be able to be in that environment and create a strategy that the faculty could actually get behind and say like, oh yeah, maybe we can make these changes to our student experience or the way we engage the community members. And then the job got really boring and I was looking for something different. And so I went over to Lululemon and I started in their people team. And it's actually really funny because I've only ever technically worked under a VP of HR's portfolio for a year and a half of my career.
Your entire career?
My entire career, I've only spent a year and a half in the world of like HR.
And here's why it's interesting to people who are listening is because your field of expertise is talent.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
And so I was in charge of creating pipeline programs and onboarding programs at a time when Lululemon was going through massive, massive, massive growth at a rate of like 250 new hires in their head office in a year, for example.
Crazy.
And so it was just booming. And I was really tasked with keeping the culture at the forefront as we onboarded so many people that had never known. This was still when Lululemon was like, what's Lululemon? And that was really fun. Went and did my MBA, came back, was helping support international growth. So enter into the conversation of like, how do we grow into Europe? How do we grow into Asia? And it was really exciting to be a part of that team. And then Black Pants became Sheer. And I was tasked with jumping over onto product quality to fix that mess.
And that was a like, fun time.
It was, for me, I look back and I look at Sheermageddon with such a fond, it was one of the most pivotal moment. Whoa, let me re-say that again. It was one of the most pivotal moments in my career because it provided me an opportunity to show up as the leader I wanted to be for the organization. So rather than someone sequestered to a desk or solving a problem on the sidelines, I wanted to solve big problems that were high stakes, that lots of people cared about, that the problem itself was quite multifaceted. The solution required a number of stakeholders to get on board. And I was like, yes, this is who I want to be. This is how I want to show up. And I quickly learned that the longer I stayed in product quality, the more of an expert I needed to be in product quality and knowing about the waft and weave of fabric. And I was like, I don't really care about fabric that much. So that's when I knew I needed to jump over to something different. At the time, my sister Steph had started a company, a recruitment company, and she was noticing that as a recruiter, people would pick up her phone call if they had a horrible boss. But the hardest people to recruit away were usually people that had a great manager.
And so
she said, if we're gonna compete with other recruiting firms or do recruiting differently, what we actually need is a strong manager training program. And so she's like, Matt, come lead the business, develop this manager training program, and let's take over the people space.
Yeah.
So the last 5 years of my life has been working with my sister and it's been such a journey. And
sure,
we've faced so many different challenges along the way in terms of, you know, program offerings, team members, and it always felt like the stakes were high, not only for our own success, but also for our relationship.
Yeah.
And it was such a fun dynamic to be in. And then I became a parent and my whole world changed. And what I valued was of what was important to me and how I wanted to spend my days was also radically different. And so Steph and I looked at each other and we were like, you know, the business is doing so, so well right now that I just want to keep that trajectory going and I'll take a step off this roller coaster ride and join the world of rompers.
You've said so many things in there that I want to talk about. I'm so conflicted because we can go down the Shearmageddon path, which I think is super fascinating. I'm sure people want to know what the other side of that mess look like. We can talk about, because Lululemon is, at least today, is very much known for their culture and their training and the way they care about their people. We can go into that. We can also go into the dynamic of what it feels like to work with your sibling running a business. So many places we can go. But I think where I want to go is, you've had multiple transitions and now you moved to the COO of Smash and Test. But what I hear you talk about is making these career decisions so it sort of fits with the seasons of your life. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for a lot of clients I work with, they have a hard time connecting their career choices with their life. They see it as these two separate entities, but I feel like you're the type of person who fuses it together. So can you tell me a little bit about, like, even from you graduating UBC, what's dictated your choices as you moved through your different career leaps, we'll call them?
Great question.
Thank you.
And the first thing, honestly, the first thing that came to mind is like, I went for what was easy. Like early on in my career, I graduated from UBC. I was a very involved student leader on campus. And so when one of the staff members approached me and was like, hey, would you ever consider being a staff member? I was like, first job offer, done, let's do this. And so it was like purely opportunistic. I didn't look at my, 10-year, 5-year goals and have a true vision statement and purpose out of it. I was like, no, I want a paycheck and let's do this. And that was the shortest term that I've ever spent in an organization as well in my career. So like, how did I make that decision? Probably not very aligned to what long-term looked like, but it also really clarified who I wanted to work with. I wanted to work with a younger staff. I wanted to work with people who were optimistic about the future. I wanted people who relished and were innovative and willing to try things, even if there wasn't like the survey results to prove why it was a good idea. And so it really set a foundation that I think set me up well to then look for my next career within Lululemon. And that choice was really dictated by humans. And I looked at who else was at the organization and I noticed that they were like my type of people. They cared about movement. They cared about health. They cared about feeling good. And I was like, cool, this sounds like my type of jam. And the second move was really about who I would be working with. When I joined with Steph, I realized that I wanted to play a bigger game. And so at that stage of my career, I felt like I had worked my way through a very large organization at the time now. Like I grew with this growing billion-dollar company. And I didn't want to experience the same level of bureaucracy or hierarchy. But I still wanted to work with seasoned leaders. So by becoming a coach and becoming a trainer for these leaders and for their leadership teams, I was able to still work with the people that I love to work with without being within this bureaucratic red tape environment. And then with Smash and Test, it was really about what's going to allow me the lifestyle that is now important to me. So I'm now not looking for trajectory and like, what's the next big role? Like, where do I go next? And how am I going to make a bigger impact in the world? It's more like, what difference do I want my work to contribute to? And do I still get to be at home with my family at the end of the day of it all?
Yeah, so interesting. I mean, your priorities have obviously shifted.
Yeah, so I think the language you use around like seasons, it's like sometimes we just need to plan for this season in our life. And it's not this like grand gesture of like, find your purpose and own your dharma, and all that rhetoric is useful. And I would just say, consider that your dharma may change, and therefore know that it's only for now. It's only for this time, and the season may be 2 years, or it may be 20, and it'll change because you're human and you'll change.
So I love that you say that, because here's my gripe a little bit with a lot of the career rhetoric out there. You know, you see a lot of coaches, like career coaches, and you work in this, I include you in this, I guess, industry or field, where it's like, find your life's work and stay rooted to your purpose. And that's all great. But for me, and I don't know if you feel this way, it's like, well, as the seasons of your life change, you're going to have different needs. And it's okay to make your job choices based on some of those things. So if I have a shitload of debt, and finances are a big thing, maybe I'm not going to love my job, but it pays me really well. And that's okay for 6 months, 10 months. But I find where people get really stuck is in, I need to make the perfect choice next. So what's your perspective on that? Do you find that that's a thing you've experienced, or a thing you see other people go through when you're managing them?
Yeah, I think that there was I put a lot of pressure on myself coming into this next stage of my career, because after spending 6 to 7 months out of the job market and being a full-time dad, there was definitely this pressure to be like, oh my gosh, this needs to be a big move for me, and I want to make sure that it's the right move. And so I definitely felt that pressure. So I can empathize with people who may be at a point where they're like, ugh, I need to make a move, but it needs to be a good move. Like, it needs to be something that I'd be proud of, or that other people would be proud of. Like, I get that. And what's unfortunate is that level of perfectionist behavior has been something that we've been conditioned with since we were little. You know, like, you need to get the top grade, you need to look a certain way, you need to act a certain way, you want to have lots of friends, and you need to have lots of followers, and your photos need to be liked a lot. And like, we're conditioned by such a, if I was going to argue, it's like a very patriarchal system that rewards perfection. And the reality is, like, humans are messy and we're unique, and we don't follow one size fits all. It's never been that way. And so the hardest thing is admitting that no one is ever going to be perfect. I'm never going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's when you're like, what are the misconceptions? It's like, I think people think I'm perfect. And I'm like, and it's like, you're just falling trap to the fact that there's this thing called perfection, or this thing called like an ideal state. And I'm like, I don't want to be a cause or a mirror of that reflection. I'm just going to do me and make choices that feel really aligned with me in a way that benefits my community. And like, I want to uplift and point the mirror back to the bigger causes that I care about.
Totally. I think too, like, I think what puts, you tell me I'm putting words in your mouth, but what puts you at peace with the decisions you make in your careers as well. So one, you know what you want to be aligned to, I think is huge. So that inner work that you do. But two is, I feel like you're the type of person who's really comfortable with the trade-offs. Because here's the other thing is, like, people have a laundry list of all the things that they want, but it's like, well, if you say yes to these things, you got to say no to these things, and you got to be okay with that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Would you say that's accurate about you?
I think that you know me so well. So of course I'm like, yes, 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 100%.
Yes.
But I think that there's this element of like, sometimes people think you have unlimited time, and you don't. You know, if you want to sleep 8 hours a night, which I haven't remembered the last time I did that because I have a small baby, like, you have only a finite number of waking hours, and we can all make choices of how we spend those waking hours. But the reality is, it's like, everything I say yes to in that moment, I'm saying no to something else. So make yes. And someone once told me that yes is the most expensive word that we could ever say, because it takes our time, it takes our money, it takes our energy, it takes our focus. When I say yes to something, it's gonna cost me something. and I have to be really careful with my yeses.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting. I've never thought of yeses as expensive. I'm going to take that. That makes a ton of sense. Time is money, baby. That's what that is.
Well, ourselves is money, you know?
Yeah.
I think that right now there's so many people that have roles that are knowledge workers. Like, your brain, how you function, how you think really matters. And I think oftentimes we glaze over, at least like when I was coaching folks full time, I would focus so much on like, how are you moving your body? How are you eating? How are you sleeping? How are you talking to yourself when you look at yourself in the mirror? And these people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And like, you're supposed to like help me grow my business. I was like, I am. Like, if you can't manage yourself, like, how the heck are you going to manage other people? Like, if you can't develop habits that are self-serving, how are you going to create habits and processes and practices that serve others? Like,
100%.
You know, and I think that we overlook that when looking at like what's next and what's new. I'm like, what's now? Like, what's going on right now for you in this moment? Like, you said yes to this moment. So what's coming up for you?
Yeah. And make those decisions one step at a time. That's totally okay. Right. Cause you can get to your end destination in a lot of different ways. I think is the other thing. Yeah.
And I think that we haven't given people enough permission to play. Mm. And what I will say is, like, being on the recruiting side, like, I'm looking for people who have had experience in the areas that I'm hiring for, but how often are we taking risks on people that are inexperienced in the area, but like, they've got something and you see it. And so, like, as a hiring manager, I'm already always being like, who doesn't work in the industry but has solved similar problems? And like, can we bring them in so that we see the solution, see solutions that we never knew existed? And then I think of myself as a candidate applying for jobs or creating jobs. And it's like, I may not have had experience in that, but can I tell my story or to share my transferable skills in a way that shows that I can still solve problems like the ones that are being faced, even though I've never worked in that particular industry or had that specific title that you're looking for?
Oh, this is why we're friends. You see me, I see you. We can have a whole conversation about hiring because it's fascinating. So what I like about what you said there, and I'm always trying to relate this back to people who come to career coaching and why they want to use career coaches and why they get so stuck is, you know, I think we get so fixated on needing a specific title or needing experience in a specific industry. It was like, no. Well, like, this depends on the company and the industry you want to try to work for. Some of them are a little bit more risk tolerant than others, but it's about how do you make your resume speak the language of the recruiter, where it's like, oh, okay, they may not have the title, they may not work in this industry, but I can pull on these things that can help solve this business problem that I have. Like, that's the key, right?
Yeah. And I think that there's, like, a whole lot we could dive into in terms of like how to position yourself well for the job that you're looking for. And what I notice the most is how we've taken the personality out of our applications.
Yeah, we put like the resumes through a robot filter and
like, we know that they're going to be scanned for certain keywords. So I need to put in those keywords.
Yeah.
And what I actually want to know is, like, what gets you so excited? How do you spend your days outside of the job? What are we going to talk about if we were stuck in an elevator together? Like, give me something that's more than your skills and experience. I want to know your personality. I want to know how you write. I want to know how you think. I want to know what brings you joy.
I know, but I feel like that's not just on the candidate. This is a huge conversation we can have around people's recruitment processes.
Yeah.
As someone who came off the job hunt not too long ago, man, it's brutal out there. Like, when you don't hear anything from a recruiter, yeah, come on, dude. This is a human experience. We should put a little bit of thought into that process, right?
Yeah. And I think that there's, you know, as I look ahead at the future of recruiting, I think of a lot of things have happened so that we're removing bias and we're removing discrimination. I want to make sure that we're hiring equitably, and I also want to hire the right person that is a human, that has a personality and has quirks and has uniqueness to them. But when we remove all of the uniqueness out to hire equitably, what's the balance there? And I don't have the answer. I just, like, this is one of those thoughts that I'm like, I think about versus have answers to.
Totally. Oh man, I feel like we need a whole other episode just to talk about recruiting and performance.
Well, okay. Are we gonna, does this mean I get to be invited back?
Oh, well, you know there's a 2.0. Okay, can we actually shift the conversation back to you? Because we really swung in the other direction. Okay, so we've talked about your time at Lulu, your time at, a little bit with your time at the Corcovo as CEO, but can you tell me a little bit about some of the key experiences in your career that have really stuck with you to this day, and why?
Key experiences. I remember first job, first boss, Michelle Lacoyne. She would always schedule our one-on-ones at the end of the day. And she would not book anything after our one-on-one. And so our one-on-one sometimes went for like 2.5 hours. I will remember one specific one-on-one. We were talking about our young alumni strategy, and we like ordered pizza because we had stayed so late that we had missed dinner and we were still in the office. And we ate pizza together over our one-on-one that started at 4 p.m. And I think it ended at like 7. And I was like, this is the longest one-on-one I've ever had. And my boss cared enough about me to talk with me and strategize and problem solve. And it really set the expectation for my bosses really high. And so I'm like, sorry for all of the bosses that I had after that, because I'm like, sorry, she was great. Another key pivotal moment was when I realized that I needed to leave in order to chase my goals, and that leaving wasn't a bad thing. So I loved my job at Lululemon. And on my day two, we were asked to like set our 10-year goals. And I had a 5-year goal of completing my MBA. And my boss and my colleague were like, well, why don't you just start applying to schools this year? I was like, I just got here and you're already like asking me to apply for like master's programs. And they wrote letters of recommendation and I got in. And so a year and a half into working at Lululemon, I was already off. And part of my career at that point, I had hired again like 250 or onboarded 250 employees that year. And we had just moved into a new head office, which is now at Broadway and Cornwall, for those in Vancouver that know the head office. We had just moved into that space. And I remember leaving, and there was this big atrium, and there was a staircase that went down to the main floor, and the open atrium where all the levels could look down on. And someone walked to the edge of the atrium as I was walking out and started like a slow clap. And then everyone in the office came to the side of the atrium and like gave me a slow clap out of the building. And it was like the craziest experience that I've ever witnessed. But I like knew and like cared for so many of those people. I was part of their career journey. And I walked home crying, because I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I just am leaving some of my favorite humans in the world to move across the world by myself. Like, what? Like,
right?
As someone who thrives in community, like, what the heck am I doing going off and doing this thing alone? And I'll never forget that moment, because it was like, I quit my job because I wanted to chase a goal, not because my job was horrible. And it changed my relationship to quitting. Like, I want to quit all the time now. I'm like, I don't love it. Great. I'm going to quit. I love it, but I have bigger goals. I'm going to quit that too. Like, just remove the things out of my life that stop me from getting, like, making the difference I want to make in this world. Sheermageddon at Lululemon will always, always, always be a career highlight. I just loved it so much, but mainly because of the team that I got to work with. I hired this team, I'll call of misfits, like people that never worked in product before and had such different personalities and character traits and expertise. And they came together and solved the problem that needed to be solved. And we called ourselves the Rogue Pigeons because no one suspects the pigeon. And we could go really rogue all the time because we had the level of responsibility and leadership that we needed and was sought after in the organization. So that was a big moment. I think another one was watching Steph be nominated for a Women of Distinction Award. It was kind of a casual night, I would say, for her. But I really, when working alongside my sister Steph at the Quirker Co., I really got to see her step into her own leadership and like really own the fact that she was, like, she created the business. And often early on in our working together, she would talk about me as a co-founder and she would talk about how like we started the business. And I was like, I want you to know, like, you were in business a year before I ever joined. And like, yes, we did like little quarterly check-ins, but that was because we were nerds and had quarterly goals with each other that like, I was like, it's never part of the business. That was just like us being nerds. And so when she was nominated for that award, I think it just showed me like, oh, she's finally like really owning who she is in for this company and for the community. And I think she's been unstoppable ever since, to be honest. Those would be, I would say, like career highlights.
Those are amazing ones. First of all, pigeons are majestic. I love.
We may need to redefine majestic. You know, like let's go on a little tour of the city and point out majestic things, you know?
I think the way I've used that word is incredibly accurate. I actually didn't know that story, the Lululemon one. I didn't know that one. That's really beautiful. But there's something to be said when you've served others in a leadership capacity. I don't know, that does things to people. You know, I'm not surprised at the standing O for you.
You know, and what I will say is that I think that what I'll underline from what you just said is that when you serve others as a leader.
Yeah.
Like for me, like my career has not been about me. Like it hasn't been about like getting a title or getting something. It's like, what difference do I want to make in the world? Who do I want to work with? How do I want to help someone else? And when it's not about me, then it's really easy to do good work and be in bold conversations and make big changes because it's like, yeah, I'm going to screw up. I'm a like complete weirdo at times. And so if I can accept that and love that and clean up my messes and be responsible for my messes along the way, then I can like play a bigger game. It's like, it's not actually about me. It's about making a difference in the world. So if I want to make a difference in the world, I got to get over myself real quick.
Totally. Yeah. I think what's been really amazing, like listen to you sort of tell your story from top to bottom is you've stayed very true to your anchor. And I think that's what's allowed you to move through your career and make the types of decisions that have felt good to you. And I think that's huge, right? Like knowing who you are, know your anchor, know what's most important to you, and you base your decisions on those things, including your career.
You know, I actually, when you say this, I'm like, I don't actually think I know what my anchor would be.
No.
Like, as you say this, I'm like, I don't know what my, like, if you ask me the question, so don't ask me this question. I'm not going to have an answer for it. Don't make me look like an idiot on the podcast. Okay, Diana?
Okay.
But more like understanding that I think what really shifted was when I had to like battle the notion of, will my life completely change by coming out as a gay man? And will all my ideals and hopes and dreams about who I want to be and the life I want to live be like blown up into smoke? And then realizing I'm like, but I'm going to do it anyway. So I'm going to risk blowing my life up to be true to who I am from a like sexual orientation perspective. When that going through that process almost created this sense of like, oh, that's it. Like I can do that. Like I can put my entire life on the line and still be okay. And that takes like, that's, I come with a huge amount of privilege because I have a loving family. I'm white, I'm cisgendered. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much privilege that goes along with my sexual orientation story. But that being said, it's this notion of like, who I am became more important to the rhetoric of the story than like what I'm going to do or like what my purpose is. It's like, can I just be more of myself every day? So can I like make a fool of myself? Can I laugh at myself? Can I dance with my best friends? Can I do all the things that I absolutely love every single day? That's like, that takes more courage than, you know, doing a PowerPoint presentation in front of investors.
It's so beautiful. Just, oh, that was honestly really beautiful. I have no words. I've maybe we should just stop the podcast here. I think that was an excellent end. We do not have enough time to get into, you know, you as a white gay man working in corporate, working on your own business, now working in retail, but maybe we need a whole other episode for this.
I know.
But maybe
we just need a whole other episode. We're going to do a series. Welcome to the Matt Corker and Diana Chung series. We're going to start off today. And then we're going to go through equitable hiring practices. I'm just kidding. I don't even know. This is your podcast. This, look at me. I'm just taking it over.
Oh my God. I'm so into it. Okay. We'll do it. We'll write this down afterwards in an agenda. Okay. But quickly, how has you being like a gay white man, has that played at all in your career? I mean, we talked about you coming out and like living true to yourself. I think that's been huge, but yeah. In any other way, has that surfaced or it's really never been like an extra thing?
Yeah. Well, I think like you and I have often talked about like how our identities have never really been represented in role models before. And so like growing up, it's like, I never saw gay parents, you know, I never saw a successful gay businessman. I never saw a successful gay business owner. Like none of that was actually part of the my like worldview. And I think what's interesting is as like the media landscape has changed, we get more publicity and we see more stories. What doesn't change is like, I still look around and I'm like, I could list off a handful of gay executives that I actually know and talk to and whatnot, but I could name off hundreds of straight executives, you know? And so like, while we may be getting more publicity in media, doesn't actually change our like lived experience. And I think that that has really influenced how I live my life because I want my kids and his friends to know that there is such a thing as like a gay CEO. There is such a thing as a gay COO. There is such a thing as a gay yoga teacher. There is such a thing as a gay best friend. Like all of those titles, quote unquote, are real.
Absolutely.
And
we have work to do still. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. But you know, we're working on it. I think is the thing.
Thank goodness. The work never stops, you know?
The work never stops. Yeah. All right, Maddie, we're kind of at the end here. I think I want to wrap up with some final questions for you, some final thoughts. Your career is so interesting. We could have got down so many paths anyway. More to come on our future Matt and Diana episodes. Question number one, this is the final question.
Okay.
What do you think will always be true about the way you make decisions in your career from now until forever, or you're 65, whatever your career finishes?
That I'll always check in to see what's important and needed in the moment.
Totally. What are you most proud of? I think you talked about this a little bit in your highlights, but do you have one?
I'm most proud of my relationship with my husband.
I know, it's relationship goals for shizzle.
And it's like, it's hard. We have real talk all the time. He is like my coach. He teaches me so much about where I hold back or play small or avoid conflict and whatnot. And so it takes so much work and I like love it so much. He's the best. And I like, and in a world that like demonizes and criticizes gay relationships or like considers them to not be a valid option, I'm like super proud to be able to say I have a very successful, loving, strong relationship with my husband.
You really do. And you both really work at it too, because you really care. Yeah. I love that you didn't choose a work thing. I actually really like that. We did talk about your weaknesses, but I know you have them. what are you continuing to work on right now? It actually doesn't have to be a weakness, but what are you continuing to work on?
You know, for me, it's about how do I share the stage and how do I pass the microphone? So for me, I know I come with a lot of privilege and I know that I have a platform. And instead of me saying like, how do I be a better ally or how do I make a difference? It's like, actually, there's a ton of people already making a difference. And so where can I give like my attention, my money, my focus to elevating their voice and not speaking? Like, I may be the one who gets like the keynote speaker contract. And what if I showed up and passed the mic to someone else and said, you know, you paid me to speak. And the most important thing that I could say is, please listen to this person.
Mm, that's great. When you're not kicking butt as COO, I don't always say butt, it's ass. When you're not kicking ass as COO at Smash and Tess, where can we find Matt Corker? Definitely doing yoga.
I mean, I used to be a teacher of yoga until studios shut down, and then I became addicted to my Peloton. So you'll find me rocking out on a Peloton and often carrying a baby, doing some crazy thing like icing sugar cookies or planting seeds in our veggie garden in our backyard.
You
feel
are
very
old.
Domestic. I feel very domestic. Like, I went from being this like, I'm going to live in a penthouse and it's going to be downtown condo living forever to being like, I really like a garden. Like, I want to eat fresh mint. I don't know what happened. It's like, and I don't even think it's an age thing. I think it's more just like COVID changed what I thought was important. And I realized that I am such an outside man. I want to be outside in a green patch all the time, but I just am not an outdoors man. Like, I'm not going to go hiking in the mountains, but I am going to camp in my backyard.
And plant some mint. So people, you heard it here. You can find Matt on his Peloton eating some fresh mint. That's what's going to happen.
You know what? That sounds delicious. I may actually just do this after this podcast.
Just great on idea. Your Peloton, gnawing on like raw mint.
Okay. Do you know what mint looks like? You can't gnaw on mint.
But I thought it comes in a stock.
Gosh,
no.
You think pigeons are majestic and mint you can gnaw on. Okay. We'll work
next
on
question.
That.
If you had a choice, what kind of job would you do in your next life?
I would be a music video producer. I
oh my
love,
God.
love music, as you know. My love language is playlists, and I just want to dance in music videos, but I don't actually think I'm a good dancer. I think you're way better than I am. And so I feel like you would be the dancer and I would be in the background being like, put the camera on Diana more. That's what I would do.
You know what's crazy about this answer is that I was answering this in a podcast, Lucy and Daphne's podcast, and I said K-pop star.
See?
You see how
I'm
this
gonna
aligns?
Produce, yeah, like we were destined to always be together. Like, you can be the star and I will be your true hype man forever and always.
Oh my God, I so want to be the star. Okay. Lastly, here's the reason why I want to put this podcast together. I just want to have real conversations with my friends, obviously, talking about careers, but really to help other people, because that's why I want to do this, is help other people figure out the mess of their career. So for someone who comes to you and they're like, I'm stuck, I don't know what to do, I cannot figure out my career, what's the advice or insights you would give this person?
Stop doing what doesn't work. So if you're like frustrated that you have to commute every day, stop commuting, like figure out a different way. If you hate rolling over and pressing snooze and then you feel like a slug, like stop pressing snooze. If you don't work out and it makes you feel gross, start working out. Like, instead of trying to make what doesn't work work, just stop doing it.
I think that's great.
And then all of a sudden you'll realize you have a lot more space, both from a time perspective, but also from a mental clarity perspective, to actually like, okay, so I'm not like, my friends are always like, you should journal. And I'm like, I hate journaling. Like every time I try to journal, it's like just, it's not my best life. And so I'm like, why am I trying? Like, why do I put so much effort into the things that just don't work? So I should just stop journaling. And then all of a sudden I have a morning again, you know, I can meditate with my little dude. Yeah.
I love how direct you are sometimes. It's the best.
I mean, I think you and I are friends because of this.
Yeah. We're always like, why are you doing that? Stop doing that. Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes it makes us bad coaches though, because then we can be like, that is effed. Stop.
Does it make us bad? I think it makes us great. I'd be like, it sounds like you hate your life. What can we change? Okay, and finally, where do you think people can find you if they want to get in touch, do a virtual coffee, pick your brain, obviously not stalk you, but you know, what's the best way to find you?
@Matt_Corker at Instagram, everything else, or mattcorker.com.
Corker.com, the best. Thanks so much, Matt, for being here. Thanks for everyone for listening, and peace out. Have a good day.